This isn't a grammar in the traditional sense of telling you how to speak the language, what's right or what's wrong. This is a grammar in the sense that linguists use the word now, which is really a description of the way that the people really use the language. And I think that convinced Kent that it would be all right. So we don't say there's a right way or a wrong way. We just describe how people use the language. And even though a lot of people think it's just broken English, it does have its own rules that speakers have subconsciously. And that's what we're really describing, is how people speak the language. And there's ways that sound just normal when you're speaking the language, and if someone tried to speak the language who didn't know it, they would sound a bit funny.
Yes, definitely. I think people in Hawaii especially need to be aware that there is this other language. I think for many years, as Jeff mentioned, there was a mistaken idea that this language, this Creole, was in fact some kind of a broken English and or bad English or bastardized English or all those kinds of adjectives that people have been using for years. So definitely a book like this has been long coming. Jeff, you want to do that?
Okay, a Creole language is a new language that develops in a multilingual situation. In Hawaii, we had a plantation economy for a while, and people came from many different countries speaking many different languages, from Portugal, Japan, China, Philippines, Scandinavian countries, Puerto Rico, lots and lots of countries. And people didn't have any common language when they first arrived. The only thing they had in common was a little bit of English vocabulary they learned on the plantations. And eventually a new language came out. And this is called, the technical term in linguistics is called a pidgin language. So it's a new language that people just use as a second language to communicate with other people. But then sometimes a pidgin language becomes the mother tongue of a community, and that's what's happened in Hawaii. And so technically, the language in Hawaii is a Creole language, which is a pidgin language which has become the community's mother tongue. It's a bit confusing here in Hawaii because everybody calls it pidgin, after, I guess, from pidgin English. So people call it pidgin, but linguists call it a Creole language. And it's a Creole language like other Creole languages, for example, in Jamaica and in some of the French-speaking ex-colonies.
Let's see. The situation, it's called a language context situation here, and as people who speak different languages come into contact with each other, it's they tend not to learn each other's language, and they use the language of power. Usually it was the colonial language, but what access they have of that language, of that prestige language, is very limited, and it's also many times the speakers of the prestige language also simplify the language as well. So you really get a filtered down kind of language. But they would use that language as a common means of communication, and over time, that filtered language then develops a kind of pattern, and that's the pidgin. When the pidgin is stabilized and establishes a grammar.
I'm not sure. I think somebody else was trying to call a different number, but it doesn't seem to be a problem now. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry.
Ah, shoot.
Okay, is that on the phone?
Yeah, it's just, it's happening on the phone. It looks like somebody's trying to call one of the other lines.
Well, I'll probably go. And went into Pigeon. Can you give some examples of what those words might be?
Oh, yeah, we don't, neither of us have the book in front of us right now. We need to, let's see. There's a lot of words that were borrowed from other languages. They were like, I guess the language that a lot of the words originally came from, other than English in Hawaii, was the Hawaiian. And in the Hawaiian, both in the influence in the Pidgin and in the Creole, there were many Hawaiian vocabulary included. But there are some differences, because as these words get borrowed into the Pidgin and Creole, they also go through some changes as well. Let me just give you an old example. It's the and many people think it's a word that came from Hawaiian, but it's originally comes from Chinese Pidgin English, and it's the word used in Hawaiian is called kaukau, and kaukau means either to eat or food itself, and it actually comes from from Chinese Pidgin English, brought over by the sailors, and since Hawaiian, and it gets Hawaiianized, and since Hawaiian doesn't have a ch sound, the original word was chow chow. It's the same word that we use in the in American slang, chow. But it was brought over by the sailors to Hawaii, and chow chow then becomes kau kau, and it's been incorporated into the language today.
Yeah, there's, you have to remember that maybe 80 or 90% of the words are actually from English in the language. Some of these are used just like in English, but some of them have changed their meaning a bit. For example, the word spark, it's not used that much these days, but spark meaning to look at somebody or see something. But then there's quite a few words from Hawaiian, but they're also used in English in Hawaii. These are words like lanai for veranda, or mauka in the direction of the mountains, or pilikia,
trouble.
So there's quite a few Hawaiian words, and there's a few, very few words from other languages. There's a couple from Portuguese, like malasada, which is a kind of donut, and probably the next biggest language that donated vocabulary is Japanese, and maybe Kent can give you some examples from Japanese.
There's a number of words. A lot of the vocabulary that's borrowed from other languages are oftentimes food items. And I guess the way of sharing, I guess people would share the food items, and you would ask what is that called, and they would say what those were. But several words. Let's see. Let me think. Taco is octopus. That's used. It's a Japanese word. There's I'm trying to think of some of the other kinds of words. There's a word like there's an interesting word called we use here called habut, and habut is the meaning is to pout, and it actually comes from a Japanese word habuteru. But the interesting thing is that most of the Japanese people who come here won't know the word, because it's a dialectal word from a certain region of Japan, mainly around the Hiroshima area, and they use that word, but it's not a standard Japanese word, so it's not known to a lot of other Japanese nationals living here, but the immigrants, the Japanese immigrants who moved here, are quite aware of the word. It's habut, and it's also what you call a clip form of habuteru, so it's a shortened form as well. So there are many words like that.
How many people speak Pidgin in Hawaii?
The numbers have been estimated about 600,000. Don't ask me where the number comes from. It appears magically, but I think it's about right. I would say about half the population. Over 1 million now, I think. I believe by the last census, 1.2 million, I think.
So, are you both from Hawaii?
I am. Jeff is actually from Chicago, by way of Australia. He's been living in Australia a while now.
Well, I'm just wondering, then, Kent, did you grow up speaking Kikuyu?
Yes, I have. No, that's my native tongue, so it's not a process of learning, it's just a process of acquisition. You grow up speaking it.
So you're saying that your family spoke it?
Yes, my parents spoke it.
Do you think that's normal for most people who speak pidgin?
Sure. My parents were second generation, meaning that my grandparents were the immigrants to Hawaii. So my parents would have been the first generation in my family to speak the Creole. And then I'm the third generation, so I picked that up.
And was it difficult in school then?
In what sense?
Well, is it taught in school?
No, it's not. They have a very negative attitude about it within the school system. Oh, well, the attitude is basically that it's not a language, that it's actually some kind of a broken form of English or bastardized form of English. So they as I grew up, people try to discourage us from speaking it.
And how do they do that?
Oh, by telling us. In my generation, when I started going to school, we were constantly reminded that, don't speak pidgin, don't speak bad English. You have to speak good English. And so if you ask the teacher, teacher, I can go toilet or something, they would tell you, they would say something, no, you cannot go, you may go to use the restroom. They would correct you like that oftentimes, and withholding permission and things of those sorts. Earlier generations, though, many of them were punished for speaking it. Not officially. I'm sure that there are teachers who would use it, perhaps purposely or maybe unconsciously use it. I'm sure there are a lot of native speakers of pidgin who are teachers in the school system here, and being superficially very close to English, that I'm sure that there are cases where they would use the forms and not realize that they're actually using it. That's funny.
I'm going to ask you again, and if you could just pretend like you didn't tell me anything, what was your experience like in school when you were growing up and you spoke pidgin?
Okay, let's see.
The differences between what the school was teaching or just being reprimanded, what was your earliest memory of that?
Yeah, we were oftentimes reprimanded for using it. We were told that it was just bad English, and so I guess I grew up kind of thinking it was like a bad habit that we had, not realizing at all that it was a language. And oftentimes there were things like we would ask to use the restroom, I can go to the toilet or something, and they would withhold the permission until you got the English part of it correctly, and those things can be problematic. But as children, we just see these as things that we're constantly reminded of or reprimanded for. I don't know that. I guess it has, it builds up. These effects, negative effects, do build up. And I think there are...
Well, can you say that? I think...
There's... I'm sorry?
Something, I heard something.
Yeah, there was a little pop. Yeah.
Just start everything, I think.
I forgot what I said. This is like a flow. Sorry. We're often reprimanded for these things. And as children, I mean, it just goes with the territory, it seems like. But I guess there's a kind of a build-up over time that we become very reluctant to speak out is one of the results of the years of negative attitudes. There's also, I believe in the early, I've heard stories where our parents and even in the third generation, my brothers, older brothers and things were also punished, might have been physically punished for using it within the school system. Not so much during my time, but at least in the years prior to my going to school. Oh, yes. It has, it's yes and no, because it has, in a certain way, it has covert prestige in that it's an identity marker. It's a local identity marker. It has a long history of this covert prestige.
What do you mean by covert prestige?
Usually we think of a language as having prestige because it's the standard language and it's the language that you need for getting a job or, you know, getting a college education. And so you'd think that everybody wants to speak this prestige language for those reasons. But here in Hawaii and also with African-American vernacular English, the language has a different kind of prestige. It's like the language of the community, and it's something that you're proud of because it shows your identity. So in the case of Hawaii, speaking pidgin is one of the things that shows that you're a local, you're from here, and you're not just one of these tourists who hopped off the plane. So in that way, it's a very important language, and that's why I think it's stayed alive for all these years, despite the experiences that Kent was talking about where teachers were trying to drum it out of the poor students.
So are there definite class distinctions in regards to people who speak pidgin and those who kind of shun it?
I think there is a perceived class difference.
Sorry, can you start?
Yeah, I think there was a perceived class difference. Back in the 30s and 40s, there's a middle class, even earlier than that, a middle class was established in Hawaii. And as a result, a lot of people moved off the plantation, the plantation laborers moved to the urban areas because there's a lot of money that was funneled into transportation and commerce and other kinds of industries within the urban setting and within Honolulu. And so a lot of people moved off the plantation to those areas and established a kind of a middle class situation. And so there was a perception where the pidgin was associated with a working class. It's a language that was enough to do menial kinds of labor on the plantation. But in the urban setting, for the middle class, they thought that wasn't appropriate, that you would need to speak English or standard English to get ahead. And this is when you have a dichotomy occurring, a class dichotomy. But it's not the case that the middle class people, the people moving away from the plantation, didn't speak it. It's just a perceived difference. So yes, it is a class. There is a class distinction. However, there are a lot of people who are, I think, maybe in the upper class or certainly old timers here who have very high positions and stuff, who take a lot of pride in being able to speak it or use it.
I don't think so. Yeah.
You're a little kind of fuzziness, if there were. Okay. With the publishing of your book, do you feel there might be some resurgence of pride in pidgin?
That's a hard question.
Well, are most people comfortable with it? I mean, when you say more than half of the population speaks it, I mean, that's what Hawaii is known for.
It's
one of the things.
Yes, it's quite, I don't know that it's known, Hawaii is known for it by outsiders, but certainly within the community, people use it. It's a bit schizophrenic, I would say, as we mentioned before, the idea of the covert prestige and identity thing, that we will use it, or we're oftentimes reminded by friends and people in the community that, you know, if we don't use it, at times that, you know, we're sort of put down for it as being someone fresh off the boat or someone from the mainland or something. And certainly there is, so certainly we, you know, we like to use it, and yet we're oftentimes embarrassed when we do use it. So it's kind of both ways.
Yeah, your question, you know, about resurgence of pride sort of implies that it was kind of dying out and people were getting really ashamed of it. But I don't think that, you know, that there's been any sort of great resurgence or anything, or there will be, because a lot of people are proud of Pidgin. And recently, like in the last 25 years, there's been a large amount of literature being produced in the language. And there's always been, like, comedians doing their comedy routines in it. And I guess one reason that we wrote the book is not to try to prop up the language, but mainly we're thinking of the education system, just to inform teachers, especially newcomers to the States, but also some teachers from here, that, you know, it is a language, it's not just broken English, and to try to get them to sort of accept the way that kids speak and try to teach them to be bidialectal or bilingual, you know, accept the fact that they can speak Pidgin because that's part of their identity, but at the same time they have to learn standard English for college and employment, but that they can have both. And we're trying to get teachers not to have these negative attitudes towards the language, which sort of get internalized by students. And even to use the language in the classroom to sort of help students see the differences between Pidgin and standard English.
Had teachers get the book just for that purpose? Are they doing this, what you just said?
We've had a bit of correspondence. I don't think they're all rushing out to buy the book, but I think that, you know, a few are, and they're... A lot of people have said that it's really helped them to understand why their students talk the way they do. And a lot of them have used not only the grammar parts, but the history parts and some of the suggestions we make at the end of the book for bringing Pidgin into the classroom. Yeah, a few have been doing it.
Do you know of any that perhaps I could, when I, you know, come to Hawaii, is it possible to record a conversation with kids using the book, or teachers who are using the book? I just think it'd be interesting to sort of follow up and see, you know, how they respond to it.
Not offhand. I'm not sure. We could check. I mean, I really don't. Yeah, offhand I can't say.
If there's an opportunity that way, or if you know of a particular teacher who, you know, has used the book, it might be interesting to talk with her or him.
Uh-huh.
I think Jeff had one more comment on that. Sorry.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at my email messages, but I'm sure I could dig out, you know, names of people who have written to us and put you in touch with them if you come to Hawaii.
Oh, that'd be great. Or give them to Jennifer and we can figure something out.
Okay.
I guess that's my falls on me, since I'm the native speaker. Let's see. Yeah, I think at first they would think it would be, you know, quite weird. But yeah. Let me just give you a real classic sentence. I oftentimes use in my class as well. Let's see. This is a sentence that everyone understands. So if you're local, you understand what it means. It's go stay go, but my go stay come, but you gonna be late. Did you get that?
I didn't understand it.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
go
stay go, but by you gonna be late. Wait, what would they say? Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It's go stay go, I gonna stay come, but you gonna be late.
Can you say it one more time, but slower?
Okay. Let's see. Okay, let me try again. Go stay go, Mumbai I'm going to stay calm, Mumbai you're going to be late.
And what does that mean?
Okay, so let me break it down. It's go stay go is basically, let me give the situation, a context in which you would use this. Let's say a bunch of friends and I were going to go to some function, maybe a movie or something that's close to where I'm living, and they come by to pick me up and I'm not ready, I'm in the shower yet. And I'll yell out to them, go stay go, Mumbai gonna stay come. So you be going, and later I'll be coming. Mumbai, you gonna be late, otherwise you'll be late.
Wow. It's very complex.
It is, oh yes, it is a language. It's yeah. That's the whole point of the book, is to actually show that there is, in fact, we're talking about a language that has a grammar. No, well, let me correct you there. It's not necessarily proper. This is not, we're not speaking improper English, so we're speaking another language. So let's just call the other language English and this one pidgin, okay? How's that? Okay.
So how would you translate that in English?
Let's see. Go stay go means you go ahead, you be going. Because the stay there is sort of the progressive marker, what we call the progressive marker in pidgin. So that would be the ing form of the verb go. So going, stay go, it means going. So go, stay go. So you be going. Bumbai, later. That's from English by and by, which is hardly used in English these days. But by from Bumbai means later. I'm going to stay calm, so I will be coming. And then there's a second use of Bombay, which appears a little later in the development of the Creole, and that Bombay means otherwise. So it's a connection between the first part of the sentence and the second part. Bombay, you're going to be late, so otherwise, you'll be late.
Before he gives his example, while he's thinking, I'll just give you a little mini grammar lesson here. So the way that this language marks tenses in the verb is quite different from English. So let's, for example, in English you'd say, I'm talking for present, and I will talk for future, and I talked for past. But here, this language uses a word, a small particle word before the verb. And so this might help you to understand Kent's examples. So if you want to say, I'm talking, you'd say, I stay talk. I'm not a very good speaker, but sorry about my accent. But so I stay talk, so putting stay before talk would be the present progressive. And I gone talk would be the future. And I went talk would be the past. So it's a very different system than English. So anyway, I'll put on Kent now for his example.
But I heard, I guess if people heard it very quickly, they would understand some of the English words in it, since it's predominantly English. I have borrowed most of its vocabulary from English, so they would have a superficial understanding of it, but not, if not a deeper understanding, I believe. Should I give you another example? Well, let me just give you more vocabulary examples then. For example, one of the forms that we use here is a negative form, negation here, is never, from English never. But it's a different usage from English never, because in English never means not ever. It's an adverb in English, but in the Creole, is actually the function is, it's a past negative form. So how you would translate into English would be by the use of didn't. So if I say I never go, it means I didn't go. It doesn't mean I have never ever gone. Also, there's differences, like in bigger systems. Like, let's talk about the negation system. One of the ways that you do negatives in English is to add not after an auxiliary. And trying to think of a form. So if you say he was going, and then you say he wasn't going, he was not going. So you contract the was and not, and it wasn't. So he wasn't going. So basically that's the rule for negation. For forming negation sentences in English, to add a not after auxiliary. If there is no auxiliary verb, then you add one in, like the do verb, and then you attach the not to that. In pidgin, it's a little different, since there's what we do is there's things like if you say something like, okay, the cat, in English you would say the cat doesn't eat fish. In the pidgin, you say the cat no eat fish. And you cannot say the cat not eat fish. That would be ungrammatical in the pidgin. However, if you say my sister isn't a teacher in English, you would have to say my teacher not one teacher. I mean, so my sister not one teacher in the Creole. So in that sentence there, you would use a not. So there are sentences in pidgin where you would use no for a negative. And there are other sentences they use not for the negative, and it's actually it's clearly demarcated. And this is part of the grammar of local children, that they know how to do negative sentences using not or no, depending on the grammar structure of the language. But so it's very different from the English, where you would always only use not. So this is a really good example where we can show the complexity of the Creole, of the pidgin.
Do you know, is there any effort to preserve the language in recording, audio recording?
I think people do recordings, have made recordings. There's the Oral History Project, who have been collecting stories, but their purpose isn't necessarily to preserve the pidgin. There is more to preserve the history, but in talking to people about the history, then they've recorded some of the pidgin as well.
Yeah, there are lots of similarities amongst Creole languages around the world. And in fact, this is what put Creole, the study of Creole language is on the front pages of the newspapers about over 20 years ago, I guess now, because people were trying to explain why a lot of things in Hawaii Creole look like things in Jamaican Creole, which look like things in French Creole and Mauritius. So you had all these similar features in these far separated languages, and people were trying to explain how these originated. And a fellow named Derek Bickerton, who actually worked here, came up with a theory that the way that Creole languages were acquired by children was in a situation where they didn't have access to a fully fledged language. So they had to sort of draw on their innate knowledge of language to sort of create a new language. And that's why Creoles are similar the world over, is because they represent sort of the very basics of human language. So this was a very controversial hypothesis, and it got lots of people interested in Creole languages for many years. Unfortunately, now it's sort of been disproved that the languages aren't that similar, but still they do have some similarities. For example, most of them, all of them use a small word before the verb to show the tense and things like that. Kent, you can
locally? You mean locally here or generally? I'm sorry?
In Hawaii.
In Hawaii. Huh. Well, I'd like to know that question too, the answer to that question. Let's see. Future meaning, is it dying off or?
It doesn't sound like it's dying out, so I guess.
There is a perception by some, I think, who are starting to... There's a perception by some people who believe that, in fact, they believe that a pigeon is dying. I personally think that it's changing. That's part of what the project that Jeff is working on, to actually study the differences between the pigeon that's used today by younger speakers and how the pigeon was used before by older speakers. But I think my perception is that it is changing. It's becoming, it's actually superficially sounds more like English today, whereas before there were a lot more words that were used from Hawaiian and from the Japanese and other languages that seems to be disappearing. How should I put it? Just superficially, though, it's sounding more like English. There is a totally different system underlying it yet.
Yeah, I agree with Kent. There is a perception that it's dying out, but I think that it's not really, but it is changing. And you have more and more people who are bilingual here. In the past, you had a lot of people, and the only language they spoke was pidgin, was the Creole. But now, especially in Honolulu, the majority of people would really be bilingual, and they switch back and forth. And I think that this is starting to affect the language. You have people switching so quickly between the two languages, you don't really know, you know, which one they're speaking sometimes. But there are certain features that people recognize that will always be there, especially some of the sounds, the phonological features, the intonation, and the way certain words are pronounced. And for a lot of people, that's pidgin, that way of pronouncing words. And for other people, oh, that's not really pidgin without the grammatical features.
Could you repeat that last sentence one more time?
What was the last sentence?
For some people, that is pidgin.
Oh, for some people, that is pidgin. You know, just if you have the right intonation and you pronounce things properly. But for other people, that's not really pidgin because it doesn't have some of those grammatical features that we were talking about.
Certainly I think the perception is more on within the Honolulu setting, the urban setting where things are changing. But on the other islands, especially the far end, the big island of Hawaii and on Kauai itself, there's I think it's very strong yet. It's used, I think people use it more.